gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Humane Roundup Podcast with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop.
That's Ashley Bishop.
That's me. What about you?
Oh,
who are you?
Yeah, I'm Daniel. I'm Daniel Ettinger. How you doing, Bishop?
Tired, but good.
Yeah, you said you were tired. I'm good. Yeah. I'm just super excited. We're recording at a different time than we normally do, but I'm excited because of our guest today, and it's going to be a fun show. So I could see why you're tired. You worked all day. You're probably, you know, you have two kids. They're twins. They're probably nagging all the time. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no, you're not far off.
And then you're a busy woman, so we appreciate your time. So cool. You want to jump into it? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Are you ready?
I know you're excited. I'm excited. Yeah, I am. Let's introduce our guest today. It's Dr. Melinda Merck with Veterinary Forensics Consulting. I did that. Okay. Veterinary Forensics Consulting. Dr. Merck, welcome to the Humane Roundup Podcast. We're so excited to have you on today.
Thank you for having me. This sounds like it's going to be a blast.
Oh, we have fun. We have a lot of fun. So I've been to a few of your classes. Bishop, have you been to?
I have not.
But you know. You're like, oh, I know who that is. But those that don't know who you are, if you wouldn't mind just kind of introducing yourself and how you really got into the animal welfare world, the forensic stuff that you do, et cetera.
Well, as short as I can do this, I was a veterinarian. I am still a veterinarian in private practice in Atlanta. And I was working with shelters along with running the practice, and I would see cruelty cases and I would report them before we had laws to support them. Oh, and wow. So eventually we got a felony law passed. I joined a cruelty education group that was formed by a bunch of attorneys, and they asked me if I could join and speak. And that's what started. Is I was like, sure, and I'll just do some research. And I found there was nothing, absolutely nothing. Well, Atlanta's the headquarters for the National Association of Medical Examiners. So I called on the medical examiners, started working with them to learn forensics, to learn their field, the medical legal death investigators. And because I'm like, well, I've read all the Nancy Drew novels, I've watched all the crime shows, I know what I'd look for. And that's what I, you know, if I could learn the human forensic field, then I know animals. So I could filter the human forensics and figure out what could apply to animals. And that's what started. The first cruelty investigator I worked with was also a former crime scene investigator, investigated homicides. So together, Joey Brooks and I really just took off developing it. And that's what started. We had a lot of guilty pleas. So that helped reinforce that what we thought we knew was true. And then that just led to being asked to write textbooks, to speak, and and to start, you know, the International Veterinary Forensic Sciences Association, and it just snowblossomed. So that's what I did. One of the earliest things, which I think is relevant to this, to the people that are listening to this podcast, is the first time every time we tried to call crime scene out to help us with a case, they would freeze. They were like, well, what do you want us to do? We don't, you know. And I'm like, they barely take photos. And so that's when I reached out to the human crime scene people and asked if I could start taking their courses. I became certified in bloodstain pattern analysis because we weren't going to get the assistance, right? We just weren't. And so that's was really a motivation that if we're not going to get the assistance because they aren't trained, right? Then we needed to train animal people. Yeah. Yep. And that's how somehow I got here. Not really sure.
Well, how many hours would it take somebody to go through some of your trainings and stuff to be very proficient at it? Do you think?
Well, there's a lot of different trainings out there, right? So we've got online courses through Vetfolio that people can take, and more coming out. I think there's some good ones online. There's good textbooks. There's a new one that just came out by Chris Ottoman and Linda Fielder and Emily Lewis that I think would be great for investigators. What makes a good investigator is having that curiosity and being thorough, right? Is when you don't have all the support, or you don't know, then you ask and you reach out and ask someone, can I use, I've got plant evidence. Can I use that to help build a case or refute someone's statement? You know, proving what it's not is just as important. Sometimes that's the whole case, is proving what it's not, right? So I think, I think a good probably 40 hours of learning and then getting out there and doing it.
Go ahead, Bish.
Oh, I was just going to follow that up with.
Yeah, please.
It's attainable for all of us because most of us need continuing education credits. I need 32 every 2 years. So
yeah,
it would be attainable for any one of us to go through some of these trainings and become more proficient at it and be able to put our cases together better and have the evidence that a judge and jury or whomever would expect to see in a human case, so right. We can make it realistic to them that it is important.
Exactly.
And that goes back. Yeah.
No, go ahead, Dan.
Well, it goes back to a couple things that you said just a few minutes ago was, before I left the last agency that I was at, there was an amazing a crime scene in the snow. So you have all these impressions, and the police were the first one out there, and they basically were like, whatever, it can wait until the morning. And you lose so much precious evidence because there's still that, it's just a dog catcher, or animal control can deal with it. It doesn't matter. It's just a dog. And so that's one area that I think you're raising that level of professionalism, not just in the animal welfare world. Well, I guess you can expand on that as far as like the veterinary world, right? So now veterinarians know what to look for if an animal is brought in that they might not see prior or might not have thought about prior. I know I talk a lot about bestiality on this show. And when I train and there's veterinarians in there, a lot of times they're like, oh, I would have never thought that would have been connected to that, right? So that's just one aspect. You're opening doors and windows. But something that I really keyed in on when you were talking was that curiosity. I believe in this profession, and I'm not trying to throw shade to anyone. I believe that there are some officers that carry this innate instinct to investigate, just to be really curious, want to basically pick up every piece of whatever it may be in a room to try and find an answer. And so having that and then building on those skill sets makes those people amazing investigators. And I'm not taking away from those that may not have that same instinct, because they can still learn some of those same skills and really be great investigators too. So it's neat that you kind of threw that out there.
It is. I think that, you can't take too many pictures, right? You can't collect too much evidence. If when in doubt, pick it up. You never know. I mean, you never know when something might become important later, or you find out there's a forensic test or a way to link it to something. You just never know. So I guess that would be the biggest lesson is just, if you don't know, my cat has joined us and is now scratching on her scratching post.
Love that. Okay,
yeah. Mine usually screams at us, so it's all
yeah. And I think that's where people are afraid of being wrong, or you don't have to know what an individual, what a piece of evidence, its value is at the beginning, right? Because you don't know. You don't have the whole story. Your investigation's going to unfurl, and it could lead down multiple pathways till you hone in on what it really is. So you're never wrong in collecting everything, mm-hmm. right? And being curious is a mainstay for a good investigator. I agree. And you can develop that curiosity. I think what holds people back is that fear of failing or fear of looking stupid. But yeah, geez, I'll collect stuff. I have no idea if we're going to be able to use it. So let's put it in a bag. So, you know.
So in case somebody is actually interested in this and wants to find some of those resources, where can they go to look for it?
There's, you know, there's a lot of different trainings available. Certainly there's more of the larger humane agencies that will bring you, customized training for your area. There's now, especially with the pandemic, there's a lot of, you know, online stuff. You know, I mentioned the Vetfolio courses. It's vetfolio.com and just search forensics. There's courses on there. My bloodstain instructor, I think, teaches 2 or 3 hours on there. So there's some things that might be of interest for investigators. It's certainly important to know and recommend to the veterinarians that you're working with, or it's easy online.
What? We need to have a relationship with people that we work with? We should be saying, yeah, hey, you should get some of this training.
Yeah, the veterinarian that, yeah, that doesn't want to touch your bestiality case. Yeah. That's a whole nother topic, is working with your veterinarians. But yeah, you can do that. There's the Vetfolio. I know there's other courses that have been developed. I know that Justice Clearinghouse, right?
Yeah, they do a lot of stuff.
Putting things out there. Yeah, because when they first contacted me, I hooked them up with, I'm like, you don't understand, you know, that there's a need for training for animal cruelty officers, and if they could be that. So that was good. And then there's, you know, what is it? I think through ALDF, and I think that's Dr. Chris Ottoman and Linda Fielder, they're trying to do some customizable, again, bring it to your area trainings. There's the, you know, the International Veterinary Forensic Sciences Association. It's very forensic science and medicine oriented, but investigators seem to get some knowledge from that. And that's just the remote. I'm just thinking of like remote Zoom, that kind of thing. Sure. And that's just keeping abreast of what's going on in the forensic sciences and so forth. Because I know I'll do training for the law enforcement group for HSUS. And then, I think that was what I recently understood was ALDF with that group. Linda Fielder is an investigator out of Oregon. And then Dr. Ottoman used to run their Oregon Humane Society.
There's not a lot out there as far as what I think we'll start to see are more either like undergrad programs for animal welfare or master's degrees, et cetera, that we're just not seeing it yet. I know the University of New Haven has something and regarding forensic investigations, as well as just understanding the whole connection between animal welfare and the human, you know, interpersonal violence, human violence, et cetera. Yeah. It's just, and then, you know, you have some universities doing the, you know, the human animal bond, et cetera. I just think as we continue to grow and getting the word out there and people seeing, you know, whether it's these links to potential school shooters or mass shooters, et cetera, knowing that there's animal cruelty related, I think as we continue to just evolve, hopefully it becomes more of a, I would say, like an opportunity for people to learn and really be part of something to, you know, figure out why these things are happening and how we can stop them before they happen. So your work is amazing at what you do getting out there. Do you see a future in that? Do you see like yourself either becoming like a full-time professor at some point, teaching this in a curriculum to college students or, you know, something like that?
So I've been there, done that a little bit. University world is not my cup of tea. I'll just say, fair, it's not, totally fair. You know, I started a couple of courses for the vet school, but, you know, there's the master's program out of, University of Florida. My goal is that training needs to be available so that you can do it the next day, right? It needs to be, it doesn't have to be a master's, right? Okay. When you mentioned New Haven, I think that came out like right around the beginning of the pandemic or something.
It did,
I
remember yeah,
seeing they, that. Mm-hmm. So that Dr. looked Maxwell, really, yeah. yeah, that looked really, I've forgotten about that. That looked really exciting. But there's opportunities to learn. And oh, what I was going to mention is going to the human forensic side, right? Mm-hmm. Learning bloodstain pattern. Because I know Joey would use that. There was a horse shot, you know, in a field. And he used that along with animal behavior, right? To find out the point of where the horse was shot to figure out where the shot could have come from, mm-hmm. right? All out in the pasture. So that's what I know, like here I'm in Austin, Texas. So the Houston, there's a huge place in Houston that offers training. I think reaching out to participate or be able to attend whatever's offered in your area for the human crime scene investigators. Right. And it's also a way to get in the same room and talk about it. It's an opportunity for the officers to, when I did my, my bloodstain, and when I went to the Bloodstain Institute, and they were showing horrific, I'll never forget, there's horrific photos of this baby that had been beaten in Italy. And we were all walking out. It's all police, right? I'm there. I'm the only non-police. And I walked out. I was like, holy crap, how could they have done that to a baby? And they're like, oh, baby probably wouldn't stop crying. How can you do what you do with animals, right? Mm-hmm. That impacted them because they see that. So I think it's a huge opportunity for officers to get in that same room.
To touch on some of the different things that can be tested and things like that. So what about things like, you have blood, DNA, like can you, as you would with a human, match the blood from a DNA sample to the blood of an animal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They use that on human crimes too. Right. So and that's where you can get the buy-in for the police officers, they for their investigations whenever, because I tell them is like, you cannot do a crime where they're in the vicinity of where an animal lives or has lived and them not pick up animal evidence. You're missing it, right? They're going to walk out with fur or feces on their shoes, you know, something's going to be on their body. If there was a dog, a cat, horse, you know, there. So the DNA databases have built up enough that it's statistically, you know, important, admissible in court, that the DNA is going to match to that individual animal.
Okay. Right. And it collected the same way?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Plus okay. more. Animals tend to shed a lot of DNA in their urine, which I guess humans don't. And also in their feces. So the feces can be used, the urine.
Yep. I'm not testing feces to see if your neighbor's dog is pooping in your yard.
But if you got dog feces on somebody who committed an assault.
Mm. Right.
You can place them somewhere, you know. There's the other thing with hair that is shed or fur that is shed, there's no root attached. So they can't do what's called nuclear DNA or full DNA profile. But because animals groom, shed fur can have saliva on there.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So there's a lot of these differences, right? And then if they defend their property, their owner, then there's a chance there's, you know, stuff on their claws or even their fur or their teeth.
Right? With that, is it forensic? Would it be considered forensics to measure a bite wound? Like, so say somebody gets bitten by a dog and you measure it with a forensic ruler. And then do you want to do impressions of the teeth? Can you just take photos of the canines with that ruler to match up the puncture wounds from the mouth? Like what are your thoughts on something like that?
Yeah, that's really not being done enough. You need to take the dental impressions, really. And because you can get a veterinary dentist, which there's usually one in every city, to get that, or even a human or forensic odontologist. So that's a forensic dentist. They could even sometimes take animal impressions if they have the right, what are they called? The thing they stick in the mouth, right? Yeah. So to get the clay and the impressions, they can. The problem is the movement, the dynamics of an attack in the movement of skin is that, you know, that there can be some minimum and maximum things, you know, if the skin moves or they're biting down, you know, is it truly the width between the canine teeth? There's forensic odontologists that do work on animal bite cases. The biggest problem with animal attacks and bites is first responders cleaning those wounds instead of, just take a swab. If someone would just take a swab before you clean it, it takes 2 seconds, right? There's take a swab to get the saliva of the offending animal. You can use them. I think it's really important when you have multiple dog suspects, right, to exclude. I think that's important because you're going to be looking at euthanasia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the forensic dentist, the forensic odontologist, a lot of times are called in to analyze that, those cases.
Okay.
But yeah, you can.
So you said that the samples that you would take would be just like you would in people, but is it going to go to your regular crime lab, or do we now need to send those samples off to a specialty crime lab?
Great question.
Yeah, so it depends. So if you got a bestiality case, right, and you're swabbing for human semen, seminal fluid, whatever it is, that needs to go to the human crime lab. And they can test whether it's human or non-human on anything, whether it's blood or whatever. And then it can be sent on to a veterinary DNA lab.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's the University of Cornell and I think University of Florida, right? They accept that. And then the ASPCA, don't they have a forensic crime lab? We had them on several episodes ago. I would imagine as our listeners are, you know, wondering maybe where do I send it? I'd reach out to them and see. Yeah.
Or it's UC, it's UC Davis, not Cornell.
Thank you. UC Davis
has they are certified forensic lab, work on homicide cases as well. Involving animals. Then University of Florida does some DNA, not all species. And then you were going to say somewhere else, Ashley?
I know that I've had a forensic necropsy done down in Madison in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if, you know, check with your, for me, it was kind of through a, it was through our Department of Agriculture that I was able to find it. Because our state vet is through them as well. So,
yeah, I've taught there and they are very engaged in doing animal and forensic cases at Wisconsin. They are very motivated.
So I want to run through kind of a situation, and I feel like you've done this in class, which was really cool. You kind of look, and clearly we can't look at photos here on the podcast, but we can talk through it. And so maybe the three of us can kind of give examples or scenarios. So let's say it's a animal cruelty investigation. Bishop, what kind of cruelty?
Let's say some domestic violence and physical violence to the animal.
So blunt force trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, so it's a dog. Dr. Mark, do you want it to be a dog or a cat? What do you want?
No, dog's fine.
Okay, cool. This
it's gonna
is
gonna be fun. A little dog because they
little dog.
After the little dogs. Yeah.
Okay. Now, so as I'm an investigator getting up to this scene, I think just talking through it, some of the information that we're probably gonna skip past, but is important. You know, who's the caller? Is the phone call recorded to dispatch? What information was there? Right. So that kind of textbook stuff, if you will. Now we get on scene. For you as an investigator, where do you, so let's, all right, we need a location. It's like one of those improv comedy shows. Bishop, location.
House.
Come on. Really?
What? Well, where are you going to be?
Where in that? Where, okay, where in the house though? Give me a room.
Living room, because you're going to be angry at the wife that's in the kitchen.
Why does it have to be the man that's the violent person?
Who said I said was a man?
Okay, fair. All right, keep it moving. Keep it moving. Girl. Keep it moving. So, all right, now, okay. So let's paint this picture now. You get on scene. Police, they're not there. It's just the animal control officer.
Because they heard somebody, the neighbors heard the yelping of the dog.
Okay, yeah. And arguing.
Mm-hmm.
Got it, okay. Is the dog alive or dead?
Alive.
Oh, you had to make it hard, didn't you?
Well, hey, you were telling me I was making it too easy. You can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm. So now, okay, as the investigator, let's walk through this. What should their first kind of action or role be? Okay, let's say they have consent to go in the house. The parties are separated. The abuser left the home. Let's just focus. It's safe. It's safe. Thank you. Yeah, it's safe. Sure, we have questions for the party that's there, but I just want to look at the investigation as we're like collecting information, etc. Where should they start?
They're going to be looking at anything in the house, right? I'd be looking for fear, urination, defecation, right?
Let's talk about that. Pause on that. Yeah.
So if they got chased, you know, the dogs yelped or something, you may see streaks, right, of the suspicious bile stain, you know, yellow, green, whatever. So I'd be looking for evidence of fear and fur, right? So blood, urine, feces, fur.
Okay.
Where, because they drop their fur with stress, right? We see that. And you'll see wherever that's concentrated at is going to tell you that's where most of it has happened. Okay. You don't know if you don't know what's happened, right? I've seen, I'd be looking at walls for indentations, including, I've seen one where there was teeth marks from the impact.
Like an animal being thrown so hard into or kicked into a wall. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So you're looking for anything of that. Plus, you're going to have, like, does the dog normally urinate and defecate in the house? So you got to secure a statement, right, of what is normal, what's out of whack. You know, where did it occur? So you're saying living room. The chances are it's a little dog, right? Chances are they hid, got underneath things.
Sure.
That's what I'd be thinking.
So looking like maybe there's a TV stand or the couch is kind of raised up a little bit. So looking for blood. Maybe there's a tooth under there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Underneath the bed. That would be the other. Is looking underneath the bed.
Oh, like they ran to the bedroom.
To do that. Yeah. If things are all piled up on top of the bed.
What is your knowledge and or is it admissible in court for infrared images on the animal?
Well, so that's what's going to be my next. Let's say the puppy or, you know, the little dog comes running up and seems fine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because 9 times out of 10, they do.
What do you do? Right? So this is where my level of frustration goes really high is officers think they can't do anything at that point. Okay. And what I train them is as a veterinarian on scene, I cannot tell you if that dog has been physically abused. Mm-hmm. And if I can't, as a veterinarian, you can't. Correct. So what do we do? Right?
Pat it on the head and say goodbye.
It seems fine, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of people do that. Yeah.
I know. It can take hours for surface bruising to show up. And let's just say it's at night. Do you have the best lighting? Do you need a search warrant to inspect the dog? Yeah. Unless you got consent from one of the owners, right? Oregon Humane, this is Linda Fielder, their group had a form that gave temporary consent for an exam. And that, so it gave them consent. So they're not seizing the dog, but they're actually getting like this temporary examination, make sure the dog is okay. And then you're not liable for any costs, et cetera, et cetera. And they had great success with that, or they could bring the dog.
Isn't
Because
there
if you're going
case
to
law
use, is
in
it,
Oregon as well about an illegal blood draw on a dog? And we can table that for later. I don't want to, but it just made me think
oh.
of a situation that occurred in Oregon about getting a warrant to perform
Yeah,
veterinary.
I think they got that settled like that was a stupid ruling. If I'll just go ahead and say, because I was with the Association of Prosecuting Attorneys, they were talking about that and they were getting that settled because that was everybody was in up in arms going, you didn't have consent to draw blood. So this form, it basically, I'm like, bro, this form gives them consent, right, to do an exam, and that includes that, right? And so to do using a thermal imaging camera on scene, you could do, it's still a search, right? It's an inspection. So in Joey, my cruelty officer in Atlanta, he learned how to use the camera, right? So this is why I think officers can do this. And then he would work, have a vet look at the images, right? And
And this
the
is
thing is,
thermal
thermal
images?
imaging.
Okay.
Thermal imaging of the animal. What was that, Ashley?
I was going to say, so that's something that with permission, you can take those photos. And if you don't have reason to seize the animal right then, you can take it to the vet at a different time.
You
Get
can
your
even,
warrant. Yeah.
you can send it to the vet on call or whatever you're,
Yeah.
because now everybody's going to have a friend that's a vet. Ask them to look at it and see, right? And working with them, there's thermal imaging courses online. You got to know your camera. You got to know what to do. And Joey's available for advice. But it's amazing what you can do with that. But the problem is you've got to rescan the animal. Because in an acute phase, you may not even see that much inflammation or hot spots, right? And then they may develop, or you may see hot spots and then they go away. How do you prove an animal has fallen down the stairs or disprove it?
So
They
you're
should have
saying you
multiple.
would you're taking on scene, you're taking photos, and then with it, is it 24 hours later you're taking photos again? Like, what's that timeline?
Yeah, you're still in where you can, whether you save the images or not, you're scanning the animal with thermal imaging. If you've got any hot spots. Yeah. So you want to do, I think you should do it. Yeah. In 24 hours. And the younger they are, the shorter that time frame is because they heal faster. So if it's a puppy, I'd do it in 12 hours and I would repeat because you want to see, is it getting worse? Is it getting better? Has something new developed? It can take like 6 to 12 hours for like hemorrhages to show up in the eye. So, this is just those scientific studies, is just what we've seen, right? An animal we know has been hit by a car, how long before the bruising, when it shows up on the skin, means there's tremendous hemorrhage underneath, tremendous trauma. So that doesn't, you've got to what, call someone's been beating this animal and you go out there and the dog seems fine. I'm like, you aren't qualified. I'm not qualified. And you don't know, especially in a domestic case, is this the first time? Do you think this is the first time the dog has been a
No,
target,
you're not
right?
there at ground zero, never.
Right. So you really need to get x-rays to look for
All the
old
breaks.
fractures, right? Old rib fractures. So that having that temporary consent for, temporary exam, right? That was amazing. And I can send it to you. I don't know if y'all have a website you can post it up on, but it was just brilliant. I'm like, that's how you get around it. You get consent.
Who pays for it? I'm sure our listeners
Well,
are
then the
wondering
shelter
that.
would do that, right? You so
Oh,
the
I see.
animal officer, wherever they're just getting consent to take it back to have
To
their
their.
vet take, or
Gotcha.
emergency vet or whatever look at it. And then the key thing, and I'm so glad we're doing this, the key thing is to run the muscle enzyme test.
So that's a blood test, yeah?
Right.
Can you
And
talk
it's
about
not,
this? Because I've heard about this. Please, yes.
yeah, it's not a test that we can run like on our, in most of our in-house labs that we can check your dog's kidneys, liver, whatever. This has to be sent out. We'll get it the next day, but it's called CK or CPK is the other. It's creatine phosphokinase. It's an enzyme that's released from the muscle. So it will go up and again, repeat it again. 24 hours later would be ideal because you can see it going up or coming back down, right? We have normals and it'll skyrocket with trauma. And that can be your whole case. Your whole case.
All right. Don't miss next week's part two of Dr. Melinda Merk. This is one of our favorite podcasts. We love all our guests, but she is crushing it. So check in next week. Check out part two with Dr. Melinda Merk. Thanks for listening. And as always, keep it humane, Maine.